In the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah, who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah. His wife Elizabeth was also a descendant of Aaron. Both of them were righteous in the sight of God, observing all the Lord's commands and decrees blamelessly. But they were childless because Elizabeth was not able to conceive, and they were both well advanced in years. Once when Zechariah's division was on duty and he was serving as priest before God, he was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. And when the time came for the burning of incense, all the assembled worshippers were praying outside. Then an angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing at the right side of the altar of incense. When Zechariah saw him, he was startled and was gripped with fear. But the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to call him John. He will be a joy and delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He is never to take wine or other fermented drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even before he is born. Many of the people of Israel will he bring back to the Lord their God. And he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." Zechariah asked the angel, "How can I be sure of this? I am an old man and my wife is well on in years." The angel said to him, "I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to tell you this good news. And now you will be silent and not able to speak until the day this happens, because you did not believe my words, which will come true at their appointed time." Meanwhile, the people were waiting for Zechariah and wondering why he stayed so long in the temple. When he came out, he could not speak to them. They realized he had seen a vision in the temple, for he kept making signs to them, but remained unable to speak. When his time of service was completed, he returned home. After this, his wife Elizabeth became pregnant and for 5 months remained in seclusion. "The Lord has done this for me," she said. "In these days he has shown his favour and taken away my disgrace among the people." There are a number of ways to find out you are expecting a baby. And there are a number of places to find out in. But, you know, although we're all different, I guess that as a general rule, it would normally be most common for the woman to find out this information first. And for this revelation to take place in a normal, everyday setting. Perhaps the bathroom. Because although expecting a baby is the most extraordinary thing, it is also fairly common. And so there's a certain format which we tend to follow when we receive this news. And yet here in the Bible, as we look at the book of Luke, in the build-up to the birth of Jesus Christ, and we read this rather unusual story about Zechariah and Elizabeth, we see that things are a little bit different than normal. After all, it follows none of the usual protocol which we, all the people of the time, would have been familiar with. It's not Elizabeth, for instance, who finds out first that she is expecting a baby. And the news is not relayed to her in everyday life situation. It doesn't come via the usual channels. Instead, it's Zechariah, her husband, who gets the news of this new bundle of joy that they are expecting. And of all places, he finds out in the temple, the most holy place in Jerusalem, as he goes about his duties in the inner courts, away from the prying eyes of the public, where only the priests and only a few of the priests were allowed to go. And given this setting and the unusual route this announcement has taken, no pregnancy test, no doctor's appointment, no aversion to caffeine, as far as we know, we're not really surprised to find that it's an angel of the Lord who relays this news. The angel Gabriel, no less, who appears in the temple with these words, "Do not be afraid. Your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to call him John. It really is quite an extraordinary way to find out you are expecting a child. And perhaps the most normal thing about this whole experience is Zechariah's response to the news. When upon hearing that his wife is to be expecting a baby, he turns to Gabriel and exclaims, "How can I be sure of this?" Or if you like, "Are you sure? Are you sure this news is correct?" Words which I'm sure many a man and woman have exclaimed when they found out the same news for themselves at one time or another. And of course, his response is totally appropriate, because on a personal level, this news for them is quite amazing. For Zechariah and Elizabeth, for a woman who has been unable to conceive and subsequently has become the scorn of her village, for a man who has given up hope of having a son, that in his society is such an important thing. For an older couple who have been trying for years to fulfill a dream with little hope of it ever coming true. This news, on a personal level, must have been totally amazing. And yet it comes in such a bizarre fashion. Of course, it is the birth of John the Baptist who will pave the way for the Son of God. But nevertheless, why such an odd announcement? I mean, why tell Zechariah first? And why announce it in the temple in Jerusalem, the most holy place? Not even the birth of Jesus Christ was announced in this way. And this is John the Baptist. Someone who really is nowhere near as important as the Son of God. Why did it happen in this way? Well, maybe it's because there was something more going on here. Maybe there was something more than just an announcement of birth. You see, at the beginning we're told that Zechariah and Elizabeth are a devout couple. We're told that they observe the Lord's commandments and decrees blamelessly. We're told that they're descendants of Aaron, who was the first high priest of the people of Israel. And we're told that Zechariah himself has followed in Aaron's footsteps, as a priest serving in the house of the Lord. That's what he does. They are a couple completely dedicated to God. And yet, there is still an emptiness in their lives. Of course, they've been unable to have children, and Zechariah has clearly prayed about this for some time. But there is also a sense that in their lives and the lives of the people around them, there is a greater emptiness, a more widespread barrenness, if you like, one that not only pervades their lives but pervades society in which they live at the time, one that has resulted from the prolonged silence of God, this 500 year gap between the Old and New Testament, between the last prophet who spoke directly from God to his people and the soon to come John the Baptist, who will speak directly from God to his people again. Of course, during this silence, Zechariah and those before him have continued to follow the ways of God. It's not that the people have gone away from God necessarily. The people have continued going to the temple, they've continued carrying out the rituals, they've continued observing all the traditions that God has called them to observe. They have continued living their lives in the right way, in the hope that God will return. But there has been this awful silence, this awful emptiness, this awful barrenness. And it's gone on for so long, 500 years, that the temple that they worship in week after week must have seemed almost deserted of the presence of God. The rituals had become tradition. The traditions had become rituals. The people are almost going through the motions in the hope that one day God will remember them and return. And although they look
devout and they look holy, they're almost completely barren, empty of the real life which once led them so dramatically in the past.
Do you know, when I was younger, I used to have this great toy that was, I don't know whether you ever saw them, it was a wine glass that looked like it had wine in it, but it was empty. I don't see now why that was so great. But when I was a child, I thought it was brilliant, because I'd go around pretending I had wine, or I'd throw it in someone's face. It's not really funny when you're older, is it? But as a child, it's such great fun. And I loved it, because it looked so real, even after I'd left it on the windowsill and it had kind of dyed a sort of urine colour. I still thought it was wonderful. My glass, full of wine, but really it was completely empty. I did search for it for today, but I think I must have eventually thrown it away. What a great gag. A wine glass that looks like it contains wine, but actually contains nothing. And you know, in a sense, this was what society was like as we enter the beginning of the book of Luke. And we see a people who devoutly worship at a temple that they really believed was empty. They looked like they were full, but actually they were empty. So, you know, when the news of the expectation of John comes to Zechariah in the inner courts of the temple in Jerusalem, it's not simply a really strange way to tell someone they're expecting a baby. It's not simply a sign of new life for Elizabeth. It's not simply a prayer answered for Zechariah. It is something much more than this. Because you see, for the first time in 500 years, there is an understanding that the temple is no longer empty. For the first time in 500 years, signs of life are detected in the inner courts of the house of God, as an angel of the Lord appears and speaks directly from God to his people. At last, God has come back and visited the temple. The hope is that God is finally here. And this is even before John the Baptist has been conceived. God has visited his temple again with new life. And you know, as we read this passage and we look at our lives today, as we continue through Advent, as we prepare to welcome Jesus on Christmas Day, as we live our lives through this festive season as Christians, in a way, there is a real danger that just like Zechariah and Elizabeth, and the people of that time, we are sometimes simply going through the motions. You know, we come to church, we take communion, we light the Advent ring, we read the well-known stories, we have our traditions and our rituals, which we do every single year, and we're very faithful to them, but actually, sometimes there is still a deep emptiness about our lives. And in some areas of our lives, there is still a barrenness that we don't know how to change. And that's not to say that we don't earnestly long for God. That's not to say that we don't desire our lives to be different. But sometimes, just like Zechariah and Elizabeth, we live our lives as if God's temple is empty. As if all we hold in our hands is an empty wine glass which just looks as if it's full. Or if you like, we live our lives as if God is silent today, and as if we're still waiting for him to arrive. But you know, as we head towards Christmas, the truth of this passage is that even as we prepare to celebrate, even as we look to get ready, even as we go through the motions, God is here. God is here with us today in this sometimes slightly uncomfortable and a little bit cold setting. God is here. And not only is he here right now,
but he longs to fill our lives
with new life.
He longs to fill the areas of our lives that are empty. He longs to transform the places in our being that are barren. He longs to take up residence in his temple. He longs to take up residence in our lives completely. And you know, we may not always recognise him, and we may not always feel that he is here, but even before the day we choose to celebrate as Jesus' birthday, God is with us. So we're invited to come, all who are thirsty, and to receive from him right now, today.